Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this episode of The Photo Show. As you can see, we have all our three experts with us tonight. So let's start off with good evening, Damien. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Snow. Nice. It's lovely. Yeah. We had some yesterday morning. We had some tonight. So we're very happy.
It looks like you're going to be making your own Christmas cards. That looks
yes, that could be a new profession.
Very good, good. And good evening, Neil. What's this? Austrian Christmas fair?
Swiss. Yeah, it's Montreux. They always have a big wheel there, and it's a little pet project to go and take a photo so and see what patterns you can get.
Yeah, lovely. We're going to talk about this, some of these photographs afterwards, guys, on our topic tonight. We're going to look at photographs and post-work, but we'll come to that later on. And Ian, good evening, Ian. How are you?
Good evening. Yeah, very well.
Yep. You've been out today taking some photographs in the cold? It's been quite sharp today, hasn't it?
No, I've been doing something indoors, but that's I have to keep that hush-hush, I'm afraid.
Ah.
But it's something different for me. So.
Okay, we'll have to get the thumbscrews out later.
Nice background picture, Ian. I like that nice, gentle walk and the sun. It's a nice...
Yeah, that's from a few weeks ago, that one.
It's a big contrast to yours, Damo.
Yeah, slightly different, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to talk about items we found in the news, some items we found in gear. And as I said, the topic tonight is going to be about post and how you can enhance and improve your photographs as they come out from the camera. So let's start off with news. So the first thing we want to discuss tonight is this seems to be a more and more common item that cameras have been released with only part of their features at the time of launch, and it's coming later on with a firmware update or something like that. And I suppose that's just a way of tying people in early to get the system. What's your views on this, Ian? You were mentioning it the other day.
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of it. I don't think there's a problem with adding features. I think it's great you can add features as part of firmware. The only bit I don't like is the marketing of it. You know, this camera can do X, Y, and Z, but there's a caveat: it's not going to do it on day one. It's going to do it a few months down the line. So, yeah.
And then what happens if you don't? So you get X and Y when you buy the camera, and then you know Z's coming. And what happens then when Z doesn't arrive? Should you get a refund on the camera? You know, you're buying a 90% capable camera for 100% of the price.
You're at the end of the day, you know, when you buy the camera, what is being delivered later down the line, or you know, it's planned later down the line. As long as a manufacturer makes that 100% clear, then you know what you're stepping into at the end of the day. And I think in that sense, it's good that they make it clear, and that it allows the hardware to be delivered. If you're waiting for software, then you could be waiting for ages. And if they can deliver the hardware to get it physically in your hands, I think it's not a bad thing to do, as long as it's not more than, you know, maybe 5 or 10% of the delivery.
Well, they often say that this feature, you know, it can go down to -6000 ISO. That'll be available in the new year, but it'll do standard stuff now. What concerns me is what happens if they don't bring it out, if you don't get the features you're paying for. You're buying a camera on the spec that it's going to do all of these things. They say some of it might be further down the line, but they're not producing it. It's not coming through. It'll be in the next version. So you have to buy the Mark II.
That case, I don't think it's happened yet. I think if it did happen, you'd have some comeback. If they've promised something that would be delivered and it doesn't get delivered, I think you have comeback with the company. Because they've broken a contract.
Yeah.
I don't know legally how you stand, and it depends on how they've said it, I guess.
Yeah.
But if you're aware that it's delivered without a feature, and it's, you know, that's the first quarter of next year or something, then I think it's fair game. And there's a lot, it's not just in cameras this is happening, it's happening in a lot of other fields. The iPhone, great example. How many times have they released something?
You say that though, but I think the difference with, say, the iPhone and iPad and stuff is it's a free software update, typically, isn't it? Like, it's like even ISO 15. What was the feature that got delayed? Was it the share play feature?
Yeah.
You know, but it's a free upgrade initially.
You're buying the phone, the hardware for the phone.
If I own the phone already, the ISO 15 is a free upgrade. Yeah. It's when I bought this phone, it wasn't in 3 years' time I can get ISO 15. I might have SharePlay. ISO 15 wasn't a thing when I bought this phone.
Yeah, but it's like one. Actually, funny, we are going to talk about it later on. Is one of the things about was the macro on the new phone wasn't actually available when they launched the iPhone 13 back in October, November. But now it has been updated, it has been upgraded. Now you've got the full macro facility on the camera. I think you saw this, didn't you, Damien?
Yes, it's the wide-angle part of the iPhone 13 is now macro. So as soon as you get close to an object, it switches into the macro function. And initially, if you're not used to using macro, it's quite spectacular how it does it. But then on closer inspection, you find that it's the detail slightly missing and the depth of field is a bit tight with it. So I find if you're really relying on the composition that makes it look good rather than the macro features to pick up the detail.
Okay, interesting. But it just seems to be the more and more the manufacturers are doing this thing that, you know, there are more bits to come later. I suppose one starts it, they all just follow along like sheep, don't they?
The macro function is spectacular when you first see it. It's really good to start using it. It's only when you get a little bit more critical of it. It's not at the moment going to overtake my macro lens.
Okay.
I think it's just the nature of the market, isn't it? Everyone wants to bundle in as many features as possible to be competitive. So if that means, you know, promising a feature that might, you know, will come in 3 months' time, they're going to do that if it's going to sell, you know, a few more units initially. So I think like Neil says, as long as they deliver on it, it's not the be all and end all. As long as people know what they're getting themselves into, I think we know, because we're into this kind of stuff. It's whether, you know, Joe Blogs off the street doesn't know that his, you know, animal autofocus is not coming until 3 months down the line with an update. You know, that you could be a bit disappointed when you get the camera home and think, well, why is that not working? But as long as they're clear with it, I think it's not such an issue as long as they deliver on it.
Okay. One of my problems is I don't buy new cameras very often. In fact, I haven't bought a new camera for a while. So when you invest all that money, it's very difficult to give a real good sort of cross section of what's actually happening, because you really zoom into that one camera. Now, my Fuji camera has been very good. I've had the firmware updated it, and I've not been... doesn't seem to have lagged behind the features that they'd promised, but seems like there has been this clamour on the internet and the news that some of the newer cameras are coming out, especially the new mirrorless ones, that some features are missing.
Okay, well, something I think we should keep an eye on. The other thing that has been rearing its head again is the ongoing chip shortage. This doesn't seem to be easing off. It's been around now for what, best part of 12 months. This has been in the news. But apparently, I was reading here, there was an article from Sony saying that they're now having to prioritize which cameras they make. Some of their older versions, they're sort of stockpiling to keep the chips that they've got so they can bring out the latest models and try and keep to the orders they're receiving. It also applies to some lenses. Some lenses have become tight to find as well, haven't they, Liam? Ian?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, that's the problem now, isn't it, with a lot of technology, is that there's always sort of, you know, chips involved, you know, somewhere. You know, I think as far as lenses go, it's the communication between the lens and the camera. So, you know, nearly everything you buy these days that's technology related has got a chip. You know, you can't get a car without having that about 100 chips in it now, can you? I mean, it's everything requires a chip of some description. So, I mean, you put your hairdryer's probably got a bloody chip in it now, I suppose.
Yeah, it's probably Bluetooth enabled and everything. Yeah. So they require those chips. It's not enough to go around.
Yeah,
I know Nikon are having trouble making some of their speed lights. It's affecting everybody. We have the same thing. I work in medical, and there are delays in getting kits out to systems because it's harder to get the parts. It's just a fact of life at the moment.
Yeah. I will apologise to all the viewers and listeners. We are having internet problems. It could be the weather that's snow on the line sort of thing. So if we have some problems with you, some of the guys here, you might not hear them for a second or two. We are dipping in and out, so please bear with us. We'll
not leaves on the line, but snow on the line.
It's the wrong type of snow, is it?
Yeah,
it's the wrong type of snow.
Anything that can cause the slightest problem. So please bear with us, guys. Okay, the last thing I wanted to mention tonight in the news section was, again, there's been a raft of awards coming out. The one that we had a look at here, which did raise a chuckle, was the Comedy Photograph of the Year Awards. I'll show up here the winning picture here of this this poor ape that looks like it's in absolute agony. Have a look at some of these. If you go to the website, you can see most of the pictures. There's some very, very clever shots. Again, it's a bit like Neil's award-winning picture, where it's been in the right place at the right time and having the patience sometimes to wait for the right photograph, and other times just being lucky with your snaps.
You like the I think it's a pigeon or wood pigeon with the leaf.
Yeah.
Right in its face.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
So have a look at them. And the last one was the Times, or the Time magazine, 100 photographs of the year. But Damien, you spotted there was quite a bit of controversy in some of the comments, wasn't there? They weren't as impressed as you would expect.
Well, I think if you start looking at them, they are impressive photographs. Then the comments were saying that, well, it's all death, war, destruction, and are they the 100 best photographs of the year? Surely there must be some other 100 best photographs around. It's just that Time have chosen these ones. And they were also commenting on the fact that a couple of them were using HDR, which someone said had gone out in 2010, 2011. But it was an interesting one, because you look at the photographs and then you look at the comments, and then, of course, it all down to what you behold as a good photograph. And may some people might think it's not a good photograph. It's the telling of the story.
I think you have to remember that, consider what business they're in. They're in the business of selling news, aren't they? So the images are going to reflect news stories, which predominantly, the stuff that makes the headlines is the dramatic stuff, unfortunately. I think there's some absolute stunning images in there, some really storytelling images in there. One that I particularly like that I pulled up on my screen now is the Greece wildfires. And it's a shot taken from sea.
With the woman, yes.
No. Shot taken from sea. With on the left hand side, you've got the fires starting to reach the shoreline, and then you've got to the right, you've got a ferry just going out of frame, just going away from the fires, and it's just a really storytelling picture. But you've got the orange of the fires, and you've got the blue lights of the ferry, really contrasting. It tells a story. If we didn't know anything about the Greece fires, you would assume from this picture these people are trying to get away from this fire. And that's, to me, that's what photography is all about. You should be able to look at a picture and go, right, yeah, that's what's going on there. So
no, I agree. I mean, there is that picture of the child looking out of its lounge, which is just full of bricks and holes. I mean, yes, I mean,
yeah,
that
I mean,
picture. It has a power about it. Has the power been? Are we getting numb to those sort of pictures?
Yeah, but what you saying about images being sort of contrived? I'd like that image, but I can almost imagine that one being contrived in the sense, whether anyone would want to go and make that sort of story up, but it does seem quite cliche, you know, little girl with a Hulk touching the teddy in that scene. Do you know what I mean? You can see why people go, oh, that image is set up. Do you know what I mean? And, okay. And like you say, people come a bit, become a bit numb to the whole idea, don't they?
Yeah. Well, in fact, what you said is earlier, Ian, is that the Time are in the business of selling news, and I don't read Time, but one of the comments was that its political stance may be changing. I don't know if that's true or not, because I'm not a reader, but they reflect the journalist's view, and maybe they're agitating governments by the use of the power of the picture as well, which is a whole discussion in itself.
Mm. Yeah, very much so. Okay. So, yeah, but both of those sites are well worth a visit to have a look at the photographs I got there. And I said, if you want to laugh, if you want to raise a smile, have a look at the comedy photographs. Some of them are very, very good. So that's all we've got for the news this show. So what gear have we found? There's been a couple of interesting ones. Damien's found a little Ricoh compact camera. And Ian's found a special edition camera that you might all be interested in. But let's ask Damien first about this little, is it a Ricoh that you found, Damien?
Yes, it's the little Ricoh, and I was interested in it because I've got a Fuji, the 100 XV Fuji, and I quite like that. And this is another one, it's a sort of a small shooter. It's a prime lens on a 28mm equivalent with it. It is easy to use, it's smaller, and it has a place in the market, especially for street photographers, for travel photographers. And this version is I'm just looking it up as I'm reading now, it's the GR3X, so you can get the GR3. And I know some people that I go out shooting with use it and swear by it as a camera to use and really like it. And then it brings into this whole question of, is it worth buying these sort of compact cameras? This is about, £900. It's got a very nice write-up. The only thing it says, it doesn't have a viewfinder, it does tend to sort of hunt a little bit on its focusing, but it's got some lovely pictures with it. Should you buy it? So it's saying if you're a photographer looking for a solid compact shooter with a prime lens, and they're saying that it's a really nice a camera to put as a compact shooter. Yet I've got now the iPhone 13, and that does quite a lot. That's expensive. It's also, you're getting into that sort of, that's almost a camera in itself. And I'm thinking to myself, is this market going to get squeezed? So it's got a very good write-up as a compact shooter, and it does seem to hold its place in the compact shooter market. But what's going to happen? I mean, we've been talking the last few weeks about the high-end cameras, and it's interesting what's happening at the really good compact shooter market, if that's going to get squeezed by the mobile phone market.
It's at £900, you can buy a mirrorless camera for that and still have change. You know, you could buy a Nikon Z50 for £650 out of Wex, brand new. Okay, it's just the body, but a couple of £100 more, you buy a lens and you've got something that's more flexible than this. I think it's a bit high priced.
I think Ian said that to me when I was buying the X100V. Why do I want to buy a prime lens and not buy an interchangeable one? I've been very happy with the compact camera, and I really enjoyed having that prime lens. But should I have gone for a Fuji where I could have done the interchanging? And that's what you're arguing. It's a difficult one.
And do you carry the camera with you all the time, Damien? It's old adage about the best camera is the one you got with you, which could be a phone. Because it's kind of wandering into that territory cost-wise, isn't it? As Neil has pointed out, £900, that's an awful lot of money for a simple compact camera.
I did, but now when I'm going out, and now I know I've got the iPhone with me, I'm quite happy to use that for the nights out. And if I'm going out for a photo walk, then I'll take the Fuji with me. And if I'm going out for a walk where I need to use the tripod and I've got to do some, like we're going to be discussing the editing and getting a good picture of a sunset, I'm going to put the tripod, then the big camera will come out. But the iPhone is really muscling in on my use of what pictures I'll take with the camera.
Yeah. I do wonder whether these compact cameras have got a future with phones being, the cameras on phones becoming so good.
I think it depends what you, I think it depends what your output is, doesn't it? Because this is going to take a better picture than the iPhone, without a doubt. Yeah, it's got a larger sensor, so the quality is going to be better than the iPhone.
Yeah,
but that don't mean anything if you're sticking it on Facebook for, you know, your granny to see, or sticking it on Instagram. It don't matter if it's coming from the Ricoh or the iPhone. The iPhone's going to hold up fine. You know, I've thought about the idea a lot about a compact, but I just think I would want, if I'm going to then want something where, you know, I've got different focal lengths, then I might as well lug my SLR around. So I still can't see the appeal with it. The other thing I was thinking was, this is a 28mm fixed focal length. I mean, the iPhone's offering more than that now, isn't it? With what, with wide standards and zoom, is it? I mean,
zoom, yeah.
But the Fujifilm picture quality is excellent. It's really excellent, and you get
a
high output, a raw file.
Yeah. You know, the iPhone's still not going to compete if you want a pixel peep. But if all you're going to do with it at the end of it is stick it on Instagram or stick it on Facebook, then might as well take it on the iPhone.
Yeah.
Especially, and now the iPhone gives you RAW as well. So, you know, if you really want that latitude with the post editing side of it.
Yeah, getting RAW is a bit of a pain, because you have a switch that you've got to put it onto RAW. And if you get the RAW file, it's a big file. I've been reading about it, and they say that the RAW file, yes, it's RAW, but there's a couple of things that Apple do to it. So it's not a true RAW file, but it's getting close to a RAW file.
It's what they call the Pro RAW, isn't it? The Pro Res, they call it, and that the terminology. So yes, there is.
I don't actually use it, because it just takes too. I'm having a trouble. You know, I'm just using up cloud time with so many pictures. I'm going, when I have a quiet time, I go through my iPhone and delete loads of pictures that I've kept.
From what I've been reading about the sales of compact cameras, the lower end has been absolutely decimated by mobile phones. The up to £200 bracket has been almost completely wiped out. The cameras are just not selling, unless it's a very niche little phone, like the little pink Polaroid one we had the other week, and the flick phone. But other than that, that bottom end of the market has been completely almost wiped out by 90% reduction in sales, mostly because of phones and the capability of phones now. The top end, as say what you're saying about this kind of phone, I think that's a niche market. That's not going to be the average person who's going to buy that to have a phone, to have a camera. They've got their phone. So I think it's a more niche market for people. Is it a blogger's phone, Damien? Could you use it for that? A blogger's camera?
The video. I mean, I don't use a lot for the video, but it has got the capacity. I mean, Canon have really targeted that with their compact has been the vlogger's phone, but they're losing pace to the, because Sony got something similar with their compact. So it's a very, very competitive market.
I don't think. I don't think 28 mil is wide enough for that sort of thing. If you want to do, you know, the whole vlogging sense in the, you know, you're looking back on yourself and holding it, and I don't think 28 mil is sort of wide enough for that. Right. So I don't think it's really aimed at that market.
And if you're using it for kind of interviews, then it's too close, isn't it? You're going to get too much distortion when you're shoving that in someone's face. It's not going to really work well. Okay, so interesting one. So let's go to the other end of the scale with this special edition. Ian, we mentioned this, and there was a couple of little points we kind of noticed in the blurb, wasn't there? I'll show it up as you mentioned it.
One for your Christmas list. So Hasselblad 907X Anniversary Edition Kit. So it's a 50 megapixel medium format sensor, 14 stops of dynamic range, but it's going to set you back $15,100, but you do get free shipping on that.
Oh well, that's fine. That's fine. I can. So I can't. I don't have to buy it through Amazon on Prime then to get me free shipping.
No. But they won't ship it. Shipment within 45 days, working days after payment confirmation. So you want to make sure they've got your money first.
45 working days.
Yeah.
So that's 9 weeks after you've handed over your DOSH. They're going to actually stick it into a DHL box and send it off to you.
They need to get a decent bit of interest off your cash before you send it back.
Yeah. That covers the free shipping, see? Yeah.
I'd imagine. More than that, yeah. And has anyone here used Hasselblad? We hear the name mentioned. It's like the god of cameras. But I've seen them a couple of times. I've seen we fitted out a studio for a photographer, and he was all using that. But I've never seen it all for portrait work and for modelling work. It's not something, is it? Do we use it for landscape? Is it a kind of camera that you could use for that?
You can do, yeah. But the reason, I mean, Hasselblad, I think my understanding is that they earned their name in like the studio format, with, you know, fashion photography, where they needed that medium format, high resolution for, you know, billboards and big prints. Hasselblad was the name.
Because weren't they old? Weren't they 120mm film that used to be put into the cassette at the back? I remember the medium format.
Yeah.
The guy I knew, he worked for a photographer, and that was his job, to keep loading these things up with film and passing it. And there was only about, I think it was only about 15 photographs on the roll of film. So of course the photographer's banging away like Billy-O, and he just would keep changing all these backpacks with the film. And poor Tommy was trying to get them all, and he was, I remember him telling me, he feared to God that he'd actually inadvertently let the light in or ruin a roll of films, because guaranteed the one photograph they wanted was on that roll that he'd actually spoil. So, you know.
I mean, on this one, for your 15 grand, you're not even getting 4K video. It's only 2.7K. Yeah.
Power of the name. Hey, the power of the name.
I don't think it's for vlogging, though, this one.
No. I think if you held it up there to take a picture of yourself, someone would run by and grab it and it'd be gone. So, but if that's the market you're into and that's the camera you want, then there you are. There's a spur. What's the anniversary? 80th anniversary of Hasselblad being founded, is it? I think that was what I saw.
Yes. Yeah. In 2021, we commemorate 80 years of Hasselblad legacy.
Interesting. Of course, they were the ones they used on the moon, weren't they? They were the cameras that were used in the Apollo missions. Okay.
I reckon they'll sell 800 of those.
Yeah. And the our normal roundup of Canon news, I believe the R3 is now available to purchase. You can go out and buy one. And I saw an article here that the R1, the one we've all been talking about, won't be around till the fourth quarter of next year. So that gives us plenty of shows to discuss the hell out of the R1. So we'll leave that for next year. Okay, that's the gear we've got for you this show. So for tonight's topic, we're going to discuss what we call post-editing, looking at what you do to the photographs you take after they come out of the camera. So the guys here have sent us through some examples. I think we'll start with Neil. Sort of, it's one of the pictures behind you. So you took these photographs at the Winter Fair.
Yeah, it's the Christmas market in Montreux. Yeah.
So the first one I'm showing up here now is, that's how it came out of the camera. Was it taken as raw? It was.
It's raw. Yeah, it's a raw image.
And what? How was the image taken? What was it? Just.
So that's it's actually, I only had a 12mm lens with me at the time, which is why the final ones. So when we see it, we'll see it's cropped. It's on a tripod. There's a filter on the front as well, because the wheel sticks out a lot of light. I wanted to get the exposure time down to about 4 seconds, and even running the lens up at f22, I could only really get an exposure of less than half a second, because of the amount of light there. So I put a, I think it's a 1.8 ND filter on the front, front of the camera. And I wanted to get to about 4 seconds. I know from when I've done this one before, in that region, you start to get these like kaleidoscope patterns on the wheel. But it also depends how fast the wheel's going. So when they're loading passengers, it's much slower than when it things actually spinning. So you can get lots of different effects depending on the speed. And of course, obviously, then there's the light, the colors of the lights on the wheel as well, which is the kind of the attraction to it. So I've set this up and taken it. One of the funny things you get is, of course, you get all the jokers walking past, waving at the camera, thinking they're in the picture. But because it's such a long exposure, they never really show up. So it's quite entertaining taking it as well.
Wave back at us. So that's how you got that. Instead of them just being a load of circles, like a disc, you actually managed to get those little chevrons into the picture.
So because it's such a long exposure, it's kind of adding all the light positions together as the wheel spins.
And
you end up with this sort of kaleidoscope type effect, depending on what lights they've got on it.
And there you're saying you have to experiment with the amount of exposure you need to do to get it. So too little, you'd get bigger, larger black areas, too much, and it's going to just all blur.
It just all blends into one. And sometimes when it's blended into one, it's quite good as well. In fact, I took some, they're on my Instagram. I took some, at one point they switch all the lights off in the middle of the wheel, but the carriage is around the outside of it. So you end up with just this big sort of circular wheel with nothing in the middle except the Montreux Christmas market sign in the middle.
Oh, well, like a bicycle rim.
Without
the spokes. Exactly. So that's the raw image that we've got.
Can I just ask, because some cameras go down to 50 ISO. You're at 100 ISO there, were you?
That's at 250. I played about with the ISO to get the time right.
All right. Okay.
Because I had a couple of limiting factors. One being the fact that I only got one filter with me, because I was out walking through the market. I didn't want to carry a bag of gear. That's why I had such a wide-angled lens on there, because I put out with one intention to shoot something, and actually probably a 35mm would have done in the end. So
that's the raw picture we see here, which is, say, there's a lot of dark areas in there where you can't see anything at all. You've got the whole centre of the wheel. So what was the process after that that you got to? Let me show up here the final edit. So you can see quite a difference. It's a different photograph completely.
The first thing I've done is I've cropped it down because it's such a wide angle. There's a lot of stuff going on outside. I didn't want. And I wanted the present, and actually there's a reindeer with an elf sat on it in the foreground. So I wanted to kind of have those as my object tie in the front of the foreground of the image together. But with the real sort of impact being the wheel. So then I've lightened the foreground, so you get the colours of the wheel actually on the cobbled stones. There was in front of the Christmas tree on the right-hand side, there was actually a person there. I've removed them because it's anything with a long exposure. If someone does tend to stop for 2 or 3 seconds, you do then get them in the image, but they're blurred, which can make it not so nice. And basically, I've saturated it. I've added some saturation to get the lights, the colours out of the lights on the wheel, having lightened the foreground.
And is that done mostly with the sliders in? What software do you use? Photoshop? Is it a Photoshop?
I've done the whole thing's been done in Lightroom on my iPad.
Right. Okay, and there you're using the sliders to adjust the mid-tones and mid-range that you get these. I'm looking at the buildings there on the right, which you hardly see a detail of in the raw picture, but in the final thing, you've got all the detail showing up.
So there's a couple of things. The elf on the reindeer, I've just done a local brush on it, and then lightened that. with the shadows and some exposure, because it's a bit underexposed as well, the whole image. And then I've done something similar with, so I tend to layer the different aspects of the photo. So I'll add something in, and then I might add something on top of that. So there'll be a particular area I might want to lighten, so I'll use a brush on that, and then I'll use that, I'll lighten that, and then maybe part of that area I might want the color to pop out a bit more, so I'll brush in some saturation. So there's probably on the mask, there's probably four or five masks on that, and then there's some general settings as well. But yeah, I normally start with the light, the exposure, and the whites and the blacks, then work down through the color, and then add any effects at the end.
Okay. Well, things I like it, Neil, it's very nice. But if I went, now you said that you'd taken the people out on the stairs, I can see their shadow still.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have known until you'd actually directed me there. Now I know I can see the shadow.
Yeah.
And the other thing is I went on a long exposure thing. I've got a really powerful torch now, and I take that out. So I would have painted the elf and the reindeer, but again,
I did try and do that. I was going to go and stick my phone, the light on my phone, on it, and try and light it that way. But the issue there was it was probably about 12 or 15 steps from where I was stood, and I didn't really.
I've got a real powerful torch that I use to do that, but the thing is, you don't want to be carrying a lot of. You're in a really busy place. You don't want to bring attention to.
Yeah, I mean, this was midweek. It wasn't too bad.
You know what I would love to do? I would love, you know, those three or four windows that are red on the right hand side. I'd have lightened those up, because those are quite intriguing to me. Yeah. That little bit of
that's the reflection from the wheel, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I quite like those red windows.
There is, I think, if I remember, there is a bright light on the left hand side that's been taken out as well.
Yes.
Just above the roof.
Ian, your thoughts?
I've got a few thoughts. First one is what Neil's done. Always pace to shoot wider, because you can crop afterwards. If you cut something off at the time, you can't add it back in. So Neil's done a really nice crop, I think, of the image. How early did they put this wheel on, Neil?
Yeah, I don't know. I was there. I was working there, so I got there about 8 o'clock, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's.
I think it is on all day. It's certainly on all day at the weekend.
I don't think it's an issue in this image. But the problem with night photography, what you can do is you just end up with lots of black space. But not so much a problem in this image, because you've got the tree and the wheel, and then you've got the buildings going up into the blackness. It'd be interesting to try it at blue hour, where you've got that hint of colour in the sky, but you still get the wheel.
The only problem possibly there is directly behind the wheel, it's all buildings.
So it might be more distracting.
Big apartment buildings. Having said that, shooting the other way, there's a huge reindeer out on the pontoon, and that would be kind of cool. Mm.
And the other thing I'd say about editing is walk away from the image for a little while and then come back to it, because it's amazing. When you're editing an image and you're looking at it, your eyes become used to it.
Saturated.
And you'd be surprised if you come away, give it, you know, 5-10 minutes, come back and you'd be like, oh, what did I do there? Why did I do that? That looks bloody awful.
Biology, rods and cones in your eyes, the rods and cones. Is it the cones get depleted, and therefore your perception changes?
But no, it's a really nice image. The only other thing I'd be tempted to try is pretty difficult to do, because Neil was doing it on his iPad, which I love editing on the iPad with the Apple Pencil. I think it's a really nice way to edit. But in Photoshop, I'd be tempted to draw a selection a very small selection around that line that cuts through the wheel, and try a content-aware feel and just see if you lose that, like, it looks like a power line or something run into that tree.
It's
a minor thing, but it'd be worth I reckon content-aware feel would do a pretty good job of that, because it's got quite a uniform pattern around it to try and fill in from.
Yep, very interesting. Lovely shot. Yeah. Did you plan that, Neil? Had you had an idea in your head that's what you wanted to go and do?
I did a similar thing last year, from almost the same space. Now, the only thing they've done this year, which I was a bit disappointed with, the Christmas tree, this arty Christmas tree, wasn't there last year. So you had a much cleaner view of the wheel. I was interested in capturing the patterns in the wheel. So I had to try and find an angle where I could get a clean view of the wheel, and then maybe with something of interest without getting it too cluttered with everything else.
Yeah.
I did also take some straight on, which kind of worked, but as I was doing that, they turned the lights out.
Do you know what? I don't know if it's possible, because obviously I haven't been there. I don't know what space you've got, but I really like the light on the cobbles. Yeah, I'd be tempted to try and get really low and have those as a foreground and just have the wheel in the background.
Yeah, I don't know
if it's possible.
Damo would be out there with a bucket of water to get the reflection, you know?
Well, it was snowing down there today, so. Yeah. I did find quite an interesting place to take them from. So, directly opposite the wheel, there's a place selling van show, and it kind of emptied out towards the end. And I just set the tripod up there, leaned against the counter, drinking some van show, and had a chat with a girl that was there. She was very interested in what I was doing.
Yeah, excellent. Right, okay, so let's look at one that Damien, you took this one. It's a picture of a canal. So let's call up the raw image first, and you can see that now. So again, explain to us how that image came about. Was it planned? Was it something you saw? How did you get to this point to take this picture?
Well, I sort of been weather watching. I looked at my apps, and I thought there's going to be a good sunset tonight. It's going to be really good. It's going to be really colourful. And the high ground in the village where I live, Knowle, is the Knowle Locks. And these Knowle Locks are a flight of six, I think there's six locks there. And the big bodies of water with the locks that were built in the 20s to sort of fend off the automation of on roads and that, and try and keep the canals going. So the big monstrosity of locks and the big bodies of water, and you can get a really nice picture of the trees, a line of trees, and you can be on the other side of the lock and the sun behind them, and it does a very very nice picture. And I'd have to show you the picture what I go for. But the thing with that one is there's no interest in the foreground. So I went up to the locks themselves and I thought, well, let's try something different, and let's see if I can get that mooring buoy in there. So I'm lying on the ground and dispensed with the tripod, and I'd use the camera strap to stabilize the camera, try and get the reflections in, try and get the sunlight in. And it was about 13 seconds exposure, and it was an F14. I was trying to be on F11, but I was getting quite cold, and I was mishitting where I was supposed to be. I was looking for an F11 on it. And I came away and I thought I couldn't see what I'd taken the picture of. So I went back home and then thought, have I got much out of it? So I leveled it. I did an auto on the whites and blacks, took the highlights down, took the shadows up, added a bit of saturation, and then it started coming out at me that I might have some picture here. It is a little bit dark. I've got the reflections on the side, but I've got the point of interest in the front. Then I've got the middle area of the reflections. And then the eye gets pulled to the right, to the sunset, and I've got a little sunburst, and I quite liked it. And the canal enthusiasts on Twitter loved it, but that's not a badge of anything to sort of go for. But if you put it out on Twitter, there's loads of canal enthusiasts just love anything, and I'm part of the Canal and River Trust, so I got a lot of nice feedback from it. But I'd be interested to see what you think, because on editing, I'm a little mechanical. I just go through the bits and pieces. I did do a rigette, which you get bringing the darkening the sides of it, so the eyes pulled into it. But it'll be interesting to see what the two experts think of it.
Ian, go on in.
I think it's a lovely image. The only bit I don't like is the area immediately above the sun. There's an odd transition from sort of very bright white to then orange. It just looks quite unnatural. But that's a really difficult thing to get right in camera. Because you did the right thing. It looks like you've almost underexposed it in the original shot to protect the highlights. But I'd say in the final edit, I think where you've pulled the highlight slider down, I think maybe you've gone a little bit too far, and then it's broken that transition from sort of white to orange. It just looks a bit unnatural. If you didn't have a tripod.
I didn't have it. I was really, that was the camera on the ground, and it was just,
I mean, it's such a high dynamic range scene that really, if I was taking it at the time, it would be a tripod job, and I'd probably have to bracket it. It'd be a 2 or 3 shot bracket, and then HDR merge it in Lightroom for me, which you doesn't really nice natural job.
You handheld that for 13 seconds, Damon.
I'm sorry?
You said you handheld that for 13 seconds.
It was on the ground for 13 seconds with the lens just being propped up with the strap. And I was on the edge as well. So behind me, there's a drop into the water. But I'll go back and play around and get that unnatural saturation. Maybe I was playing on the histogram, and the histogram had it, you know, roughly in the where I wanted to be, but I might have messed around with the light balance a bit.
The only thing I would say as well is the sky. It would be nice for a bit more detail in the sky. There's some nice cloud patterns there, but they don't really pop out at all.
Okay.
It's just all muds in. I mean, I know it's a 13. I don't know how, if there was much wind at all, but you know, it depends how fast the clouds are moving. Because with that long exposure, you can get some nice effects with a long exposure in the clouds. But I'd have been tempted to put a bit of texture in the sky.
Okay, and this is where my editing skills are very, very primitive, because I tend to see the picture, but then I can't see the next picture, which the editing should really bring out.
But funny thing, those changes on Lightroom for, you know, the sky selection would be a really good thing to use.
It'll
do this.
A good job here. Yeah, it'll do an easy job. I'd say select sky and literally just add 5 to 10 points of dehaze, not too much.
Yeah.
And that'll, yeah, I get what Neil's saying. The sky looks a little bit on the muddy side.
Yeah, there's some nice detail in there, but it just doesn't come out.
It's fascinating how much you can change a photograph. I'm useless at Photoshop. I'm useless at photography, but I don't get much further with Photoshop. I start with a nice picture, it ends up black and white, and you can't see. But it is amazing when listening to you guys work. So, Ian, is there a kind of routine? So you've got the picture out of your camera. Now you're saying, you mentioned, Damon, about do your levels. So what do you mean by that? Where do you go from that? You get this first picture. Is there a set pattern that you work to before you start?
I do have a certain workflow. I mean, the first thing I do is apply the lens corrections and remove chromatic aberrations. There's two check boxes under optics in Camera Raw or Lightroom or whatever you're using. Then I'd normally crop and straighten would be my next step, because I always do cropping first, because I don't want to edit parts of the image that I might eventually just crop out anyway. If that makes sense. No,
yeah, especially
if there's cloning and stuff involved, I'd rather cropping is normally sort of one of the first things that I do. And then it'll be just go through the sliders, you know, pulling highlights down, lifting shadows, adding some contrast. One of my favorite things to do is it holding with the whites and blacks, holding the option key down, and you get like a mask come up, and you can do it on the iPad as well if you hold and touch the screen. So if you tried that, Neil.
I normally do it to check, so I go back, flip back to the original.
So on the slider, if you hold the screen, you get a black and white mask come up, so you can see exactly where the whites are, and you can see exactly where the blacks are.
I've never tried that before.
So I'm always looking for a little bit of white, always and a little bit of black, so I know I've got some blacks, I've got some whites. My philosophy is if I have to spend too long on an image, then I give up. I'm really not into editing. Unless it's something, if it's something like Star Trails or something where I know it's going to take some editing because there's I'm stacking images and stuff. Otherwise, I find if I have to work on an image too much, then I've not got it right in the camera. Mm. I'm trying to fix too much in post-production that I should have got right in the camera, if that makes sense. And I just lose interest and I just close the file down, don't save and give up.
And you mentioned the histogram. What are you looking for there? You're this so-called bell-shaped curve, is that what you're the ideal starting
point? No, every image is different. I'm just looking for... It depends on the image, though, because not every image can be perfectly exposed, but you're looking for the mountain range to start at the blacks and to finish at the whites, and that means you've got a range of exposure across the image. If the mountain range is not starting near the blacks, that means you've got no blacks in the image, you're lacking contrast, and same at the other end. If the mountain range is falling short of the whites end, that means you've got no pure whites in the image, so it's going to potentially look a bit underexposed.
And that's where the use of the sliders comes in to stretch that out, so you get a more balanced exposure, if that's what you're looking for. Of course, some photographs work by being completely out of normal exposure sort of images. If you're looking to bleach out something, or you're not following what so-called standard exposure principles.
A low key image is going to have a histogram that's bulked up towards the blacks, and a high key image is going to have it's going to be completely other way. You can't read too much into the histogram because there's no every image is different. But
okay, and what software do you use, guys? You're saying you use Lightroom, Neil?
Yeah, so I'll use Lightroom mostly on the iPad, and then sometimes I'll bring it up on the Mac. But I can do most stuff on the iPad now.
Okay.
But I'll often bring it up on the Mac as well. It gives me a different view of the image. It kind of goes back to what Ian said before about walking away from the image and then coming back and looking at it.
Okay.
I think we must have upset Damo.
We were just saying...
Damo decided he wanted to leave because we insulted his picture.
No, I'm really... my internet's unstable, so it's jumping in and out, so I apologize.
Is it all the bird shit you picked up when you were laying down on the ground?
Oh, yeah. You see that?
I think the only other thing to say is that it's a really good guide is if you're using something like Lightroom, at the top... in Lightroom, the first thing when you do your editing is light, and then it becomes color, effects, detail, optics, etc. And it's a top-down process. The menu is that in that order for a reason.
Okay.
And then you should really start from the top and work your way down.
Okay.
I guess the only thing possibly is cropping and the lens distortion and in your optics section.
Okay.
Lens corrections.
What do you like to use, Ian? Do you use Photoshop, I think?
No, primarily Lightroom, same as Neil. The cloud version, because it allows me to do edits on the iPad, but then I can come on the desktop and I've got the same photos, the same edits, and then I can flip them into Photoshop if I want to. I think it's brilliant.
It sounds like we do very similar, Ian, because I occasionally put it into Photoshop.
Okay. I tend, maybe my thing is I go into Photoshop so often, and I tend to use that, and I use Lightroom as just a very brief way of getting through it, and then I get to Photoshop, which I understand much more than Lightroom. Maybe I should be concentrating more on the Lightroom.
Okay.
I think it depends on what you consume it on. So I think if I was doing it mainly on a Mac, I might be more towards Photoshop. But it's just so intuitive on the iPad that, it's a no-brainer for me.
You mentioned about cropping there, Ian. Do mm-hmm. you have a standard crop size you work to? Or is it all dependent on what the photograph shows to you that you want to? You might decide this one's going to be square, this one's going to be...
It sounds a bit sort of cliche and sort of highbrow, but the photo dictates it for me. I don't try and stick to some photographers I know, love a square format, and they'll always do, square images. But for me, whatever the photo dictates, I'll crop to suit the image.
Okay. And again, you're not concerned, because I know you've got your own websites and stuff like that where you post images. You don't think, everyone's got to conform to this particular size to work.
No.
Okay. So again, completely, as you say, it's so the photo, I presume itself will lend itself to a certain style that you see that you want to project. Okay, good. Right. Well, look, that's very interesting, guys. I'm going to get Ian to send us a couple of more photographs later on. But we'll talk about them next show. What we're doing. So a quick mention to our sponsors, TSO Hosts, who provide all the services that we need to get these shows out to you all. They provide all the server bandwidth we need, as well as support for our systems. They're a great company to work with. I have my own site with them. And if you need anything to do with web, design, domain names, hosting, anything like that at all, please contact them. And if you mention BTN20, they'll even give you a big discount off your first orders. Our other main sponsor here is IMN Max here in Birmingham, who are able to service and repair and upgrade any Apple kit or Apple machines that you've got. And they can even provide some really good refurbished machines with excellent value for money. And they deal with any kind of problem, actually. That's a nice bunch of guys. Just give them a ring if you have an issue, anything to do with your Macs, and I'm sure they can help you out. Okay, so what we'll be doing now is our next show will be broadcast just before Christmas, and the guys here are going to tell you all about their ideas for Christmas presents for photographers from a range of price points.
R3, Z9.
not to yourself, Ian, not to yourself. Oh, this is what we're going to recommend for other photographers. I know what we'd all want to buy. Okay, so I'm going to say goodnight to the guys. Ian, where can we get hold of you?
IanLewisPhoto.co.uk.
Okay, lovely. And Neil?
You can get me at dodzyphoto.ch or dodzyphoto on Instagram.
Okay. And Damien?
Damo on Twitter, Damo on Instagram.
Okay. And Neil, we've now got an Instagram account for the photo show, haven't we? Where do you
We have. So you can find us all on the btn.photoshow on Instagram.
Okay.
And if you tag us in your photos, you might get a mention.
Okay, lovely. And leave any comments that you'd like to say. My name's Martin Kelly. You can get me at martinkelly@mac.com or as Magic Man in the BTN Slack room, which is the home of the photo show. If you want to join, I'll put up here a email address. Just send a little email to saying I'd like to join the Slack room, and you'll be welcome to join in with us. So until next week or when we do the show for Christmas, we'll see everyone soon. Good night, all. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Cheers, guys. Bye.